Support for Pray Public is provided by Dr. Julie Peterman Bryant of the Bryant Clinic of Chiropractic and Acupuncture in Bismarck. Naturally working with people to feel better, be healthy, and live well at all ages.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg. And let me ask you this. Have you ever heard a racist comment but didn't know how to talk about it? Or maybe the better question is, when was the last time you heard a racist comment but didn't know how to respond? Maybe it was something that happened at work and you wished your office had a better inclusive space for conversations about race. An upcoming event from Humanities North Dakota brings Chloe Valdery to Fargo. She will be speaking at the Sanctuary on April 18th at 7 p.m. and the tickets are available at humanitiesnd.org. She is a writer, lecturer, and developer of the Theory of Enchantment, which uses games to help us learn empathy. Chloe, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
I'm really intrigued right away by Theory of Enchantment. So for starters, why theory? Why enchantment?
I would say that the theory part really comes from the intellectual, nerdy part of my brain. And the enchantment part comes from the artistic, constantly in awe part of my brain. And really, enchantment is all about this idea of delighting people, of creating a situation or a space where they open up to themselves and to the wondrous complexity of what it means to be human. And by doing so, become able to perceive the wondrous complexity of their neighbor, regardless of their background, their race, their ethnicity, their gender, their socioeconomic status, so on and so forth. And of course, just to add to that, the theory part, just to say a little bit more about that, in order to be able to see that and perceive that in ourselves and in the other requires a great deal of practice. And I think that theory sort of like speaks to that that piece.
Well, that enchantment part really does have a different ring to it than it's time for your annual anti-harassment training at work. To talk about the atmosphere of the type of work you do and how it led to creating this game-based, compassionate anti-racism.
So Theory of Enchantment has produced many different, you could say, modalities. So, you know, we have workshops, which I'll be giving a workshop when I visit the community. We have digital practices. We have an online course. But the practice piece actually came as a result of us being in relationship with our customers. So a lot of our customers have been, in the past, engaging with our online course, and our online coursework, for example. And some of the feedback that we got was that it was great, but we want a quick 3-minute or 6-minute thing that we can do every single day or every other day that will drill in the habit of actually showing up in the way that the three principles of the Theory of Enchantment want us to show up. So the three principles of the Theory of Enchantment are treat people like human beings, not political abstractions, criticize to uplift and empower, never to tear down or destroy, and try to root everything you do in love and compassion. So our online curriculum is really chock full of incredible source material, readings, music, etc., that get people to drill down into studying that, but not everyone has time to do that. And so the practice or the habit modalities that we developed, which I can talk a little bit more about, were in direct response to that demand from our customers and our clients.
Well, I really want to hear right away more about the power of habit in mindset work like this. Why is it better in your mind to do 3 to 5 minutes a day instead of an hour or a week-long intensive?
So listen, I, like I said, am a nerd, and I know that I am willing to do both the intensive and the 3 to 5 minutes a day, but not everyone has time. And so we need to recognize that and respect that. And in terms of forming practices or forming a new mindset, so there's a thing that we created called the Enchanted Games League. And the Enchanted Games League is set up so that members of a team or members of an organization go into a digital practice and they receive two quests a day. And the quests are questions. They're introspective questions that get the user to reflect on the way their mind works. So questions include questions like, write about a mindset that you got from your parents that you'd like to keep and that you'd like to get rid of. Questions like, write about a time where you felt expansive and you felt defensive. What were the differences between those feelings? Write about a time where you felt superior to another human being. What does that feel like? So these are quests or questions that people receive within a limited amount of time, so 9 weeks, let's say. You get two questions a day, and the questions repeat. They're spaced out, and they're repetitive, very similar to Duolingo. And we did that because, in part, we studied Duolingo, and Duolingo, we learned from them how you can actually develop habits over time. You can develop habits by giving people these little games that are spaced and repetitive. So we just took that model and applied it to this reflective, introspective questing thing that we created. And the theory of change here is that the reason why we become prejudiced towards each other is because we are usually dealing with some sort of psychological insecurity or material insecurity. Let's say we don't feel worthy on a certain day, or let's say we're feeling insecure for whatever reason, and this is something that we all experience as human beings. But if we don't know what to do with that energy, if we don't know where to place those feelings, what we often will do is unconsciously project them onto another human being who looks different from us or thinks differently from us, as a way to deal with our own feelings of inferiority or as a way to deal with our own feelings of insecurity. So the practice and the workshops and everything that we do in Theory of Enchantment is all about getting people able to be in a place where they're able to hold the full complexity, their baggage, their insecurities, their flaws, their shadows, and their light vulnerably and openly, and in a destigmatized way, so they don't feel like they need to project it onto the other. And so that's why we have those self-reflective questions. Because over time, the idea is that you'll be more comfortable living in the question and you won't have to project your insecurity onto others.
How much of game and app development makes you feel like you sort of have a PhD in human behavior at this point?
It's definitely been an interesting journey, I have to say. I mean, yeah, the world of games or thinking about it in games has been in and of itself an education for me, and I'm really appreciative of it. I mean, there's some research that suggests that gaming is older than culture itself. Like, that's another thing that we've done as a species, is play games since the beginning, since the dawn of our species. And so it's really cool to try and use that as a way to get people to meet themselves deeper and be able to meet others more deeply as a result of that as well.
We're visiting today with Chloe Valdery. She will be speaking at an upcoming Brave Conversations event from Humanities ND, speaking on April 18th at the Sanctuary Event Center in Fargo. You can get tickets at humanitiesnd.org or learn more about Chloe's work at theoryofenchantment.com. Okay. This study of human behavior, and then you talked about making people comfortable talking about things that make them very uncomfortable. And what we are so good at instead is projecting bad things often that we see in ourselves onto other people. Before we even go more into how to unlearn that, why do you think we're so good at that part?
I think it's actually an evolutionary adaptation. I think that, you know, our limbic system in the back of our brains, it's millions of years old. It's responsible for fight or flight reflexes. And it's just a defensive mechanism, right? We're just trying to protect ourselves from feeling hurt or from feeling inferior, or from feeling insecure. And we developed that through childhood, and we did so unconsciously, and we carry that as adults. unconsciously. Hmm. And again, this is like universal to all humans. I think it's just a part of our wiring. But we also have a prefrontal cortex in the front of our brains that's younger, and you could argue less developed because it's younger. And if we put ourselves in a reflective mode, if we deliberately enter into a reflective mode, we like exercise that muscle and we use that rep and we do it in community. I think it's really important, the community piece. Mm. It's very difficult to change in isolation because one of the things that we don't want to feel is lonely, right? And if we know that we're going to enter into this work, but it's going to make us feel lonely, it's less likely to stick. We're less likely to stick it out. So community is a really important piece. But I would say overall, it's just our wiring as a species. And again, there's nothing like right or wrong about it. We're trying to get away from stigmatizing it because when we stigmatize, we're more likely to project it. Hmm. Ironically, we have to be able to really accept all of our messiness, right? Which means exiting out of the good bad paradigm that we so easily place the things that we don't like about ourselves or the things that we fail to take responsibility for ourselves in. We're trying to exit that paradigm and enter into a different paradigm where we're just simply saying, "Here I am, flaws and all. This is who I am. I would love to learn more about who you are." And I think the more vulnerable and honest and transparent we can be with ourselves, the more we create a vulnerable, transparent community of trust. That's how trust actually develops within an ecosystem. And it's only within a trusting ecosystem that you can maintain diversity and inclusion. That you can maintain the republic, the motto of the United States Republic, which is out of many, one. But there has to be trust first.
I want to talk again about the repetition, because I've been going through this Enchanted Games League process, and I know by reading the comments of other people that I'm not alone in getting kind of frustrated with that repetition, getting asked the same question. What's a mindset from your parents you want to keep? What's a mindset from your parents that you want to leave? And getting asked that over and over and over again. And let me ask you this, and maybe I'm just projecting.
Sure.
I wonder, as we talk about the work of anti-racism, for far too long, the work has fallen disproportionately, sort of mental energy-wise, on the non-dominant group of people that you're talking about. Black people have to explain why a joke is racist. Women have to explain why being told to smile over and over is sexist. Was that intentional to make the people feel like, oh, this is what it feels like to do that over and over and over and over?
Not exactly. I mean, it wasn't done in order to make people like feel, oppressed or anything like that, or feel slighted or insulted or anything like that. But it is done rather to get you to get to a place where you're automatically reflecting, which just requires repetition, because this is not how we are conditioned to think. At all. We're not conditioned to like, if I'm in an argument with someone and let's say they raise their voice, and let's say I was raised in a home where my parents raised their voice. And so when that person yelled at me, I felt, subconsciously, actually, I felt like I was thrown back into my childhood and experiencing my parents raising their voice at me. And I was no longer actually in the present moment, and I was no longer listening to the person, because what they did triggered a response for me or a memory for me that is not actually in the present moment. In order for me to be able to consciously recognize that, I have to on some level be primed to reflect back on that question that you just brought up. What's a mindset that you got from your parents that you like to keep and that you like to get rid of? If you're actively thinking about this in a regular way, or if you're doing reps that incline you to ask yourself that question in a repetitive way. Then the idea is that ultimately and eventually, after these 9 weeks are over, you will look for those patterns when you find yourself in situations of conflict. You will inquire, and your automatic response won't necessarily be to that person who just yelled at you, oh, you know, this person is just, you know, doesn't care about me or just trying to make me feel bad. You might actually inquire, in addition to saying that, in addition to thinking that, you might also inquire, well, is there something about this situation that is actually bringing me back to childhood or invoking some pain point that I experienced in childhood? And is that the reason why I'm having this reaction, and can I get curious about that? Can I voice that? Maybe I'll actually share this with the person in front of me, because I feel comfortable enough to just be open and honest and own that part of myself because it's a part of me. So that's the idea behind the repetition.
Sure. It would be like doing weights over and over and over, and that's how
exactly.
You build muscle. I will say I was a little bit surprised, because I've done many empathy trainings over the course of my career, and this was the first time where I really felt like, oh, I bet that's at least kind of what it feels like to be that other person, to just be tired of having to answer that over and over.
Yeah, that's interesting. Hmm. I hadn't thought of that, but I think that something else to think about is like how often are you unaware of the fact that you are sort of like bringing up a pattern that you learned in childhood in any situation,
right.
In any given situation, right? And because we don't think about that, we're not consciously tracking how was I conditioned, how was I patterned.
Right. And why am I having a cookie when I'm mad at my husband?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what patterns am I bringing into the present moment that I'm simply unaware of? And there's nothing wrong necessarily with the patterns. It's just like, we want you to become conscious of them. So you have choice. You won't have autonomy. You won't be able to choose something differently if you aren't aware that it's a pattern in the first place.
Chloe Valdery speaking at the Sanctuary Event Center in Fargo coming up on April 18th. Tickets available at humanitiesnd.org. Chloe, do people going to the event on April 18th need to have gone through these several weeks of Enchanted Games?
No, not at all. I mean, I'll be talking I'll be giving an overview of the theory of enchantment, broadly speaking, philosophy, where it comes from, what my background is, our principles, and some of the different offerings that they can be a part of. So they won't have to have done the Enchanted Games League that you're in right now, but I would encourage them to come with an open mind and a curious heart. And if they're a part of any community that wants to bring any of our services, including the Enchanted Games League, into their community, you know, feel free to be in touch, and we would love to be of service.
Chloe Valdery of The Theory of Enchantment speaking in Fargo, April 18th. Tickets available at humanitiesnd.org. More about Chloe at theoryofenchantment.com. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Legalizing pot has not always gone according to plan. The hope was to make the black market for marijuana go away. Instead,
it made it worse. 100% it made it worse, because it increased all of the illegal activity.
What police are trying now on the next morning edition from NPR News.
4 a.m. Central to 9 a.m. Central here on Prairie Public.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. The gray fox is a unique animal. It's the only canine in North America that can climb trees. Yet while it can be found across much of the United States, gray fox populations have plummeted in parts of the Midwest. As Harvest Public Media's Rachel Kramer reports, researchers in several states are trying to find out why.
The gray fox is a unique animal. It's the only canine in North America that can climb trees. Yet, while it can be found across much of the U.S., gray fox populations have plummeted in parts of the Midwest. As Harvest Public Media's Rachel Kramer reports, researchers in several states are trying to find out why.
Alana Wooded Ravine, Dave Hoffman, a technician with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, pulls an antenna and radio receiver out of the back of his truck. At first, he just hears static. But then...
Can you just hear the signal beep? That's the gray fox dialed into a frequency.
Gray foxes are small, about the size of an average house cat. And like cats, they can climb trees. Their rotating forearms and hooked claws help them scoot up trees to escape predators and to hunt. While gray foxes can be found from southeastern Canada to northern Venezuela and Colombia, these nocturnal, somewhat secretive animals prefer to avoid people. Still, in Iowa, state biologist Vince Evelsizer says there's been a noticeable decline in gray foxes over the last two decades.
And it's to the point now where it's pretty big concern because the population is so low that we're at risk of even losing the species of wildlife out there.
He says the DNR has tracked a downward trend with historic harvest data and more recent wildlife surveys. Biologists from Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio also have noticed a similar decline. Now, agencies in all four states are conducting gray fox studies and planning to share their findings. From there, they can figure out what may help gray foxes rebound. Indiana DNR is the furthest along with a four-year study that wraps up this summer. Project leader Darian Albers says they saw worrying trends with gray foxes.
We are hearing some concern from the public, especially from like licensed trappers, that they weren't seeing them anymore where they used to. And that kind of spurred us to start looking into it and then put some funding toward this big research project to try to understand what was going on.
Indiana partnered with Wildlife Ecology Institute, a nonprofit based in Montana, to radio collar gray foxes and collect tracking data. Technicians also collected blood and tissue samples for disease testing and genetic analysis. Don Redding, an associate professor of biology at Luther College in Iowa, is leading the lab work. While there's still a lot of data to go through, Redding says the highly contagious canine distemper virus is a big concern.
Canine distemper virus seems to be a major source of mortality for gray foxes in our study area. And, you know, this is important. They're not the only species that can get canine distemper virus.
Coyotes, raccoons, skunks, and domestic dogs and cats can all spread distemper, although it's not clear exactly how the disease is reaching gray foxes. Researchers are also looking into habitat loss and competition with other wildlife as possible causes for the gray fox decline. Coyotes are known to be a threat to gray foxes, but a recent study from North Carolina suggests the two can coexist if there are enough trees for gray foxes to climb. Lead author Ariel Parsons says those findings could extend to the Midwest.
Because we're all seeing indications that coyotes are playing a role, but clearly habitat is also an important factor, and likely there's an interaction between the two.
Loss of woodlands to suburban development and agriculture could be a factor. Studies in the Midwest will help determine that. And Parsons says she's excited to see more research into the gray fox.
They've been a background species, but now we are seeing, boy, you know, this species that has previously been fairly common and that we've ignored is starting to decline. And that's a red flag.
Parsons says it indicates that we may be missing something that's affecting other wildlife, not just gray foxes. For Harvest Public Media, I'm Rachel Kramer.
Harvest Public Media is a collaboration of public media newsrooms in the Midwest and Great Plains, including Prairie Public. Next on Main Street, join us for an insightful news recap and a look ahead at this week's political conventions with our esteemed news director, Dave Thompson. Plus, don't miss Matt Olean's intriguing review of Ghostbusters: Frozen Empire. But first, let's dive into today's top stories.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Josh Beauchet, broker and realtor with Real Broker LLC. With a team of agents serving homebuyers, sellers, and investors throughout North Dakota, the Detroit Lakes area, and northwest Minnesota. Josh can be reached at 701-367-3513.
Debate season is here, and Prairie Public will host a pretty big one for this part of the world. It's the Republican primary contest for governor of North Dakota. I'm Dave Thompson. Join me and the candidates, Congressman Kelly Armstrong and Lieutenant Governor Tammy Miller, Tuesday, April 23rd at 7 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Mountain. You can listen on a radio, a smart speaker or app, watch Prairie Public television service, or stream online at prairiepublic.org. Prairie Public's Election 2024 coverage is made possible in part by AARP North Dakota.
And it's time to bring in Dave Thompson. He's Prairie Public's news director. Dave, good to have you back on Main Street.
Thanks, Craig. Glad to be here.
Lots of news to talk about today, yes. Dave. We're going to get to the upcoming conventions here in just a moment because all of a sudden they're here.
Yep.
But there's a Democrat who has now thrown his hat into the gubernatorial race, Merrill Pepcorn.
Absolutely. And he formally announced in Fargo and Bismarck he's seeking the Democratic nomination for governor. He said he doesn't want to spend a lot of time in negative campaign. He's very positive, very optimistic, and wants to do it that way. He also said that he thinks he can get people who are, you know, not necessarily politically active, but are just interested in the candidacies and what he has to say. I have one other thing to say about this, and I did appreciate this for this reason. Announcements often are not made in person. Now, Julie Fedorchuk, when she announced for Congress, she had an event at the GOP headquarters in Bismarck, and we reporters got a chance to go and feel the energy in the room. Same thing with Merrill Pepcorn when he announced for the Democratic nomination for governor. You could feel the energy in the room, and that I kind of miss when announcements are made via emails and online and things like that. It's a little impersonal.
Sure, it's kind of a throwback, but in all honesty, why do it any differently if you want to visit with your voters, in my opinion?
That's right. I mean, why not? And I'm saying candidates are so enamored with the new technologies, they want to use that. I can understand it. Hey, see me, I'm an old guy. I talk about new technology.
Dave, I'll tell you what I think it is. I think it's the fact that they can control all messaging. They don't have to worry about a question from someone like you to maybe interrupt the things that they want to focus on. And I think that's too bad for voters, not just here in North Dakota, but across the country.
Right. And that's too bad for us because we have to just take what we're given.
Dave, I have a question about a former state representative, Rick Becker, who's turned in petitions to get his name on the June primary ballot for the Republican nomination for the U.S. House.
Mm-hmm.
Why did he have to have a petition to get on the ballot?
Oh, here's why. Because he was going to run as a Republican, but 2 years ago, he challenged incumbent Senator John Hoeven at the convention, narrowly being defeated by Hoeven at the convention, and then he ran as an independent. And the party rule says if you're going to run as an independent for an office that you sought the nomination but lost the nomination, well, you have to wait 6 years to run as a Republican with a convention endorsement. So he had to go out and gather signatures to get on the ballot. And should he win in the primary, he can be on the ballot as a Republican. So a little complicated process, but that's the way it has to work because of that rule.
Dave, exciting news from Jamestown, the Ann Carlson Center. My son has done work with them. He did work with them as a student and now as a professional. They've opened a new state-of-the-art facility, 110,000 square feet. That's pretty exciting.
Right, and you see it if you drive I-94 and look south. You can see that beautiful facility from the road. It's really nice. 110,000 square feet. The old one, you know, constructed back in 1941, started to show a little age and it was kind of bursting at the seams. So it's been a long time coming for the Ann Carlson Center, and good for them.
Good for them. They provide incredible services to folks who really need
absolutely
our love and human kindness. Dave, there's a new North Dakota website that's designed to help state's residents become more financially literate. I want you to tell us about it, but then I have a question about it.
Well, it's smartwithmymoney.nd.gov, and it's being kind of pushed by state government, a whole of state government effort to try to improve the financial literacy, especially of adults in North Dakota. There was a study that said North Dakota adults were not really sure about some of the money issues. So the governor had a challenge that he laid out at the State of the State address saying he wanted North Dakota to be the most financially literate state by 2027. They're already teaching financial literacy in the schools, but we're talking about people who are college age and older.
Dave, I think the idea is really good, and I've signed up on their website, but I also read their privacy agreement, and Many of us don't. We just check boxes and go on through. And the thing that caught my attention was this statement: any third-party website, software applications that may integrate with our services or perform services for us on our behalf and require access to your information and our usage data in order to serve their required function. Are there privacy issues with this website, Dave?
See, I was wondering about that myself, but I have been assured by the people who are kind of running it, the Bank of North Dakota, the Treasurer's Department, and so on, that say the third-party websites that they're dealing with will protect your information. They don't sell it to anybody else.
I think the idea is very sound, and I think there really are some good tools there, but there perhaps could be privacy concerns that perhaps are addressed. We'll see.
Yeah, there always are privacy concerns, and of course, with technology kind of spiraling, and you wonder if somehow they could be hacked, but you know, you've got an IT department in the state of North Dakota, and they're pretty good, and they're keeping pretty good vigilance on any attempts to hack in.
It's always a challenge. Dave, there's a new high voltage power line, a two investor owned utility that's planning to build one from Jamestown to Ellendale.
That's correct. MDU and Otter Tail Power Company. Now, the reason they're building this line is because there's congestion for power in southeastern North Dakota. And they say some wind farms can't get on the lines. And there are some wind farm projects that are being held in abeyance because they don't have the capacity to get the power to where it's needed. So this is going to help with that, to try to get the power where it's needed. And in talking to MDU, what I found interesting is that if you've got wind power in a certain area and they can't get it on a high voltage power line, they may have to sell it for pennies on the dollar, or maybe have to pay somebody to use the power from the wind farms in local areas, and that doesn't work for anybody.
Dave, I wondered if the power requirement from these server farms that we're seeing, and there's one near Jamestown, is
right,
impacting things like this.
It is, because if you remember, in northwestern North Dakota, they've got server farm up there, and there really is an issue with power availability up there. Basin Electric has stepped in to build some power infrastructure there to help make sure that we have enough power for the oil industry and for the server farms and for customers, you know, home customers and other business customers. So, yeah, it has become an issue, and these regional transmission organizations are very well aware of it.
Dave, nothing's happening in Fargo in the next few days. There aren't any party conventions or anything that you're concerned about.
Right.
Actually, they're here, Dave. What are you focused on?
You know, the interesting thing is going to be, I think, in the Republican Party, because there's been some challenges to one district, District 37 out of Dickinson. There's going to be a challenge about seating its delegates to the convention. That's going to be taken up right away, and that could be a kind of a floor fight. We'll have to watch that one. There are a couple of races for some nominations, and then there are some resolutions, including one that basically would outlaw all abortions but also criminalize women who have abortions. And pro-life groups who I have talked to and the legislators who consider themselves to be pro-life have said that that's a bridge too far for them.
Dave, what about the Democratic convention that will also be here in Fargo?
Well, I think the Democrats don't have as many issues in terms of having fights over resolutions or anything like that. So you may see a more calm convention, but it will be interesting to me to see. And we talked about Merrill being the governor candidate. He came out and he's got his platform that is under construction right now and talking about being more of a kind of down-to-earth candidate, doesn't want to run the attacks, wants to be very positive. It'll be interesting to see if the Democrats can come out with a positive message.
Just to tell our listeners, Merrill Pepcorn for a long time has read Dakota date books right here on Prairie Public. While he's running for governor and until the election concludes, he will no longer be doing that.
That's correct. And we have other people reading them now.
Full disclosure there.
You know that at one time he hosted the forerunner to the Main Street Show.
I'm aware of that. Yeah, he's a predecessor of mine.
Right.
Down the political idea here, a group of lawmakers estimates that a proposed constitutional amendment to set an age limit for North Dakota's members of Congress could end up costing the state around $1 million.
Now,
in legal fees if passed by voters.
Now, this is why. Because there have been court rulings, federal court rulings mostly, that said, you know, this thing is prescribed by the Constitution, so states really don't have a role in setting age limits or term limits. As a matter of fact, a term limit measure was thrown out in North Dakota because of the federal constitution taking supremacy on that. So when they say it's going to be $1 million, and I know that people who support term limits kind of helped support the effort to put this age limit on in a way to get the term limit issue back in front of the courts and see if they could do something with that. So this is one to watch.
Dave, your newsletter, Do You Know DAC? Mm-hmm. What's coming up next?
Well, we're going to probably talk about the conventions and the conventional wisdom that comes with them. Sorry, I love puns.
As I like
know.
That. Yeah, there's always conventional wisdom from conventions.
Right, and we'll talk about what happened at the conventions and what might be forthcoming in terms of the campaigns. And because there was a discussion about what does the North Dakota Century Code mean? You know, the Century Code is our codification of laws passed by the legislature. Why is it called a Century Code? And I think I might explore that in the new newsletter too, saying what happened and why it's still called the Century Code.
Dave Thompson. He reviews the news with us once a week here on Main Street. Dave, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Craig.
More Main Streets ahead. Stay with us.
What's better than watching a total solar eclipse? Listening to people on the radio talking about it.
In a divided America, what is music? More on this when we come back.
Seriously. Hi, I'm Ann Alquist. Join Prairie Public Monday, April 8th from 1 to 3 p.m. Central, noon to 2 p.m. Mountain for NPR's live special coverage. An event so cosmic that people have scheduled vacations and joined watch parties.
I'm trying to process what I just saw because it was such a spectacular event.
So grab your special solar glasses and maybe an appropriate workday beverage and feel connected to the expected 34 million people that are going to watch it with you.
This is something that I will be dreaming about and thinking about for the rest of my life.
Moment of joy to experience live on Prairie Public, Monday, April 8th, starting at 1 p.m. Central, noon Mountain.
We hear the fanfare, and that means it's time to go to the movies with Matt Olean, who reviews movies for us right here on Prairie Public. Matt, who are you going to call?
Ghostbusters.
There you go. Today's movie, Matt, and welcome to Main Street, Matt.
Thank you, Craig.
Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire. We're getting into kind of a series of these movies now, Matt.
They still have one foot in the past with the nostalgic appearances of Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray, not only in this movie, but in Ghostbusters Afterlife in 2021. But now Paul Rudd, who's this, you know, science teacher that meets Harold Ramis's daughter, played by Carrie Coon, and she's a Spengler, so she's in the franchise. She's the daughter of the Ramis character. And they start dating, and she has two kids, a boy and a girl. And the girl, Phoebe, played by McKenna Grace, is genius. She's like this physics genius who can figure out stuff. So that's the new kind of family that's fighting the ghosts, and they were in Oklahoma in Afterlife. Now they're in New York City living in the fire station. As with the other Ghostbusters film, they kind of have their foot in the past too. So Aykroyd is in this, Bill Murray barely in this, and I will say one of the disappointments is Murray and Aykroyd hardly have any interaction with each other in the movie.
That is too bad.
It's just so brief. Annie Potts is in this, Ernie Hudson, William Atherton is the mayor. So we have a lot of the old guard helping the new guard fight this new threat, which revolves around an orb, a family orb owned by the character played by Kumail Nanjiani, who's hilarious in the movie. He's hilarious in everything he does. Fantastic comedian. His family has this orb that should have been left alone. Let me just put it there. You can figure out the rest. Leave stuff like that alone, right?
Because I'm not touching it.
Because all hell is going to break loose if you touch it, if you unleash it. And, of course, the Ghostbusters have to fight what comes from this orb. This film is not as bad as critics are saying it is. So right now it has a 44% positive rating amongst critics on Rotten Tomatoes. Audience rating is 84%. So once again, we get this strange dichotomy, which happens a lot.
And I like it when that happens.
Yeah, because I think some of us are like, here we go again, another Ghostbusters movie, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't think it's as bad as it's being made out to. I don't think it's as good as the audiences think it is either. But sometimes people just want to go to the movies and see Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray. And I think that's what's driving this. I will say the box office had a steep decline on the second weekend. It had a 65% drop, but it still has made over $70 million right now. So look, there's a lot of CGI that, of course, takes over at the end. The comic relief is really Paul Rudd, who's kind of navigating his relationship with Carrie Coon. Is he a dad to these kids? Is he a stepfather? What is he? And as I said, Kumail Nanjiani is really funny. McKenna Grace is a really good teenage actress. She's the focus of the movie, kind of her relationships, being too young to be a Ghostbuster, how she encounters the ghosts, how she fights the ghosts, how she uses her genius with physics to help them fight the ghosts. So there's a lot of humor here. It's not anywhere near as good as the first film back in 1984. It's never going to be. And I guess I'm curious where this goes from here. The Paul Rudd, Carrie Coon, that's probably the way this is going, but they're going to bring Aykroyd and Murray and Ernie Hudson back, I would say, as many times as they can. So I would say it's a very middle-of-the-road movie. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. It passed the time well, but it's not as funny as you might think it is in parts, and the CGI is completely over the top at the end, which we're used to nowadays.
It seems to me, year after year after year, CGI is just getting better and better and better, and you certainly recognize it in the trailer of this movie. How cool was it?
It's good. I'm to the point now, Craig, where I've seen so much CGI that I kind of just shut my brain off a little bit. I know it's going to be good. You only notice it when it's bad. And it is certainly passable in Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. I'm kind of CGI'd out, just like I'm kind of biopic'd out. I've seen too many biopics the last 3-4 years as well. One other criticism of this movie, I would say, there's almost too many characters. There are so many characters fighting for screen time in this movie. You have the current family fighting the ghost. You have Kumail Nanjiani. You have the older people, the Aykroyd, the Murrays. There's a lot of characters fighting for space in this film, and I would say it's almost too many characters. One of the conundrums in movies, Craig, has always been when you have too many characters. And you'll see in movies people will cut out kids. They'll have a married couple without kids because then they don't have to cast kids in the roles. In this instance, it's good that Carrie Coon has the two kids because Phoebe, played by McKenna Grace, is really the heart and soul of the movie. But there's a lot of characters to keep track of in this movie. And maybe the next movie, if they do a third one of this new iteration, will have fewer characters.
Just for our listeners, CGI stands for computer-generated backgrounds, computer-generated
imaging and action, things that you see on
many movies today, which it's getting harder and harder to distinguish really what's real and what isn't.
It is.
Matt, something sad this week, March 29th, Louis Gossett Jr. passed away.
He was the second African-American man to win an Oscar after Sidney Poitier and the first to win for supporting actor. When I saw An Officer and a Gentleman in high school, Craig, it's one of those films that I walked out of thinking he's going to win the Oscar. It was absolutely one of those dynamic performances as the drill sergeant who rides Richard Gere through the whole movie. But it's a great performance by him. Of course, he was in Roots back in the 70s. That was really where he became well-known. Great stage performer and a commanding presence. And the thing that makes his performance interesting in An Officer and a Gentleman, Craig, is initially Jack Nicholson was offered that part. So the part wasn't necessarily written for a white or a black actor. It was written for an actor of stature, and he was that.
You're wearing a shirt today, Matt. Your favorite actor.
Yeah, Marlon Brando he would have been 100 yesterday. April 3rd, so I have a shirt underneath my shirt to mark that anniversary. I mentioned it last week as well in our film review. Obviously, my favorite all-time actor, even though some of the later performances, Dr. Moreau, we won't remember things like that. But as a friend of mine recently said, if we would only have done Streetcar, Waterfront, Godfather, and Last Tango, we'd still be talking about him today.
Do the mic drop and walk away.
Yep.
What's coming up, Matt, for us to look forward to in your reviews?
I think I'm going to see Wicked Little Letters next week, which opens Friday with Jesse Buckley and Olivia Colman teamed up again. Wonderful British actresses. That will open Friday. So I think that's what I'm going to review next week, Wicked Little Letters.
Time for trivia, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
Two of the three original Ghostbusters have been nominated for Academy Awards. None of them have won. Who's been nominated?
Dan Aykroyd for Driving Miss Daisy, 1989, and Bill Murray for Lost in Translation, 2003.
We've been to the movies with Matt Olien. Matt, thanks for joining us.
Yep.
More Main Streets ahead. Stay with us.
I'm Martha Barnett.
And I'm Grant Barrett.
And we are co-hosts of Away with Words. My background is in classical languages, and I never expected that I would be doing something every single day with ancient Greek, which is why I went into journalism. But this job combines both of those things in a really wonderful way.
I used to be a journalist as well, and an editor and an IT guy, but I've always had an interest in language, and I had an opportunity to join the American Dialect Society and eventually become an editor of dictionaries for Oxford University Press, where I specialized in new words and slang. So you bring Martha's classical stuff with my new novel stuff, and I think we'd kind of cover the gamut of what has happened and has happened in English.
I don't really think it's a challenge to make this topic interesting to people because we all speak language, we all share stories, and people are a lot more curious about this than they realize. They might think initially, oh, this show isn't going to be interesting.
Yeah, they think it's two stuffy grammarians with corduroy jackets and patches on their elbows, but we're not cobwebby old school marvs. Join us every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Central, 8 a.m. Mountain for Away with Words on member-supported Prairie Public.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
This is Dakota Datebook for April 4th. On this date in 1968, North Dakota State University's student newspaper, The Spectrum, carried a report about police raiding a keg party, but it very well could have been an April Fool's joke. Quoting from the article, "When the forces of law and order surrounded a keg party 6 miles south of Fargo last Friday, the scene was really wild. Some beer drinkers ran off across the fields, only to have half a dozen cops loom in front of them. One drinker cleverly burrowed into a haystack, while another tried hiding on a barn roof. 'Come down,' ordered the fuzz. 'There's nobody up here,' he yelled back. But the cops were clever and quickly saw through his ploy. One youth, undoubtedly a member of the rodeo club, hopped aboard a horse and galloped off, only to discover he was in a corral and had no place to go but in circles. Cops cheered them from the banks as a North High swimming star tried swimming upstream, but the spring runoff was too much for him, and he surrendered. A gallant tennis jock tried sprinting back to Fargo and got as far as the bowler before a detective pulled over to give him a ride." The article went on to claim that many of the keggers had actually parked on Fargo Police Commissioner Kenneth Johnson's land, and that Johnson had known of the party plans for days and had helped lay the trap. The article claimed the police were everywhere, in the ditches, ravines, hiding low in the weeds, and some claimed to see them perched in trees. The article said 55 students were caught, while quoting the police commissioner as saying another 100 were involved, but were no longer at the party at the time of the raid. Did this really happen, or was it a joke? The Fargo Forum reported nothing about such an event, but it did reprint an Associated Press article about teenagers from St. Paul getting arrested in Wisconsin for a drinking party that took place at exactly the same time as the alleged party in the Spectrum story. The Associated Press article had been reprinted throughout the Upper Midwest. Perhaps it was inspiration for a Spectrum spoof. Today's Dakota Datebook, written by Andrew Alexis Varvel. I'm Ann Alquist.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding by Humanities North Dakota, North Dakota's largest lifelong learning community. Dakota Geriatrics, a federally funded program based at the Department of Geriatrics, University of North Dakota, is hosting a virtual symposium on age-friendly healthcare for American Indian elders on Wednesday, April 10th, from 7:45 a.m. to 1:15 p.m. This educational opportunity is for providers, healthcare professionals, and community workers who work with American Indian populations. Learn more at dakotageriatrics.org.
Whether you're a sustaining member or you give annually or you've made additional contributions to Prairie Public, we thank you. Your generous support invests directly in the programs and services you and your community enjoy and depend on. Thank you, Prairie Public members. We're humbled by your trust.
That wraps up today's edition of Main Street for this Thursday. We're thrilled you could join us. Tune in tomorrow at 3 p.m. Central for an exclusive live session with host Jeremy Hobson on The Middle, featuring the renowned American astrophysicist, author, and science communicator, Neil deGrasse Tyson. Then, at 7 p.m., don't miss Science Friday with Ira Flatow for more enlightening discussions. Mark your calendars for Monday as well when we return with special coverage of the eclipse. We look forward to having you with us again here on Main Street.